Today's reading comes from 1 Samuel 17, verses 45 to 58. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle was the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine along with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the scabbard. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sherim roads to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapons in his own tent. So as Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is that young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as you live, O king, I don't know." The king said, "Find out whose son this young man is." As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant, Jesse of Bethlehem."
It was about 4 or 5 weeks ago when I was praying and seeking God on what he would want me to preach on. And earlier in the year, I'd read through the New Testament, so I thought it was time to read through the Old Testament. So started at Genesis and sailing through. And I'd come past Samuel, 1 Samuel, and praying to God, and he said, I really felt quite strongly, well, you've just read a couple of days ago what I want you to preach on. And it was 1 Samuel chapter 17, overcoming giants. Now, David and Goliath is one of my most memorable Sunday school stories. And it's always quite interesting when, and I was talking to Judith, Judith was talking to me actually before the service, and we were saying that when you get such a familiar story, when even non-Christians are familiar with the David and Goliath story, you do wonder what you can add to such a well-known story. But hopefully there are a few things that we can have a look at. The other thing, actually, that surprised me, perhaps isn't the right word, but when I started to read the chapter, it's an extremely long chapter. And there's so much in it, actually, that we'll just try and skim the surface and pick up on one or two little pointers. So imagine waking up and finding out that there's an army in your country. An enemy. Well, it happened to King Saul and Israel. They found out that the Philistines had moved into their country and set up camp. So Saul, on hearing this, sent his army to the valley of Elah. And what we got is a situation. We had the Philistines on one mountain. We had the valley. And then we had the Israelites on another mountain. And it appears actually that there was little action between the two armies until a giant named Goliath decides to appear. He would have been an immense sight. Verses 4 to 7, we read that his height, in very old money this is, was 6 cubits and a span. I had no idea how high 6 cubits and a span was. So in old money, it's just under 10 feet. In new money, so that's the youngsters amongst us, that's 3 meters, there or thereabouts. Now, I'm not a big shopping person, but I can tolerate Clark's Village. I don't know if you're aware of Clark's Village in Street in Somerset. I can tolerate it on a number of reasons. Firstly, there are no mega stores where there's 5 or 6 or 7 floors you have to wander up and go and see, and clothing and all that, so that's good. But the main reason I can tolerate it is there's a lot of places where you can have a bite to eat and get a drink. So you can leave your wife to go and do the shopping whilst you sit and have a nice cup of tea or coffee. And we were in, there's a Next outlet there, and I don't know, 18 months, a couple of years ago, we were in the shop, and this guy walked in. He's got to have been the tallest guy that I've ever sort of come across. And very, very thin, very lanky, but he must have been over 7 foot. He was really, really tall. I felt sorry for him because, of course, I was doing what everybody else was doing, and that was looking at this guy and looking up at him, and I actually felt sorry for him. But Goliath was 3 feet taller than that. Now, I'm 5 foot 10 and a half. That half is very important. I always wanted to be 6 foot. My uncle's 6 foot 1. My brother is 6 foot 3. Having a younger brother that's 4.5 inches taller than you is not good. It's not good. So this guy, Goliath, at 10 foot, so it's another 4 foot on top of me, you can imagine. It would have been an incredible sight. The Bible tells us that he had a coat of armor that weighed about 58 kilos. Now, if you go into a store and buy some compost or soil, that will be roughly a 20, maybe a 25 kilo bag. So you imagine lifting 2, 2.5 of those bags. And yet here he was with armor weighing around 58 kilos. He also had on his legs a bronze greave. Again, I had no idea what a greave was. So I had to look this up. Apparently, a greave was a metal part that soldiers wore from the foot up to the knee. And the idea was that it protected their shin. So in warfare, you could foul a person, obviously. In rugby, we always had a rule, no matter how big or tall somebody was, if you grabbed them around the legs, they couldn't go anywhere and they'd fall over. Pretty much the same sort of principle. So he was togged up. The Bible also tells us that he had a spear with an iron point of 7 kilos. So that's a few bags of sugar, just the iron point of this spear. So you can see, Goliath really was a giant. And so he calls for an Israeli warrior in a winner-takes-all contest. Can you imagine? What would that create? Well, certainly for me, that would create fear and dismay. And in verse 16 of chapter 17 and 1 Samuel, such was the impact of the giant that for 40 days the Philistines came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand. But the Israelites, of course, they were in fear and dismay. And fear, of course, I'm sure we've all been fearful of many things. One thing that fear does, it's like rabbit in a headlights, isn't it? You suddenly don't know what to do. You don't know where to turn. You perhaps can't get out of a situation because fear has taken over. And that was certainly the case with the Israelites. And I'm sure many of us have had giants that we've had to face and overcome. I'm sure there are many of us that are currently facing giants. And as Rod indicated earlier, very often these come unexpectedly, so I'm sure in the future there'll be many of us that will have to face giants in situations that we're currently not even aware of. I just wrote a few things down. Maybe a giant is a habit or a habitual sin that we maybe have trouble standing up to. Maybe it's an influential person, maybe a family member, maybe a boss, maybe somebody that we work with, and they're of a bullying character, and they try and take control of our lives. It might be simply the opinion of others, and we're frightened to give our opinion because another person's opinion is so strong. Maybe difficult circumstances that can envelop us. Maybe it's an illness, or an illness in someone that we love. And we're hearing from Paddy. I'm sure that's been a bit of a giant for you in the past few weeks. Maybe it's a financial issue. Maybe it's worry, gossip. It could be alcohol, bad temper, or things of a sexual nature. Maybe a giant for many of us is praying for family members to come to know Jesus. And we've been praying for many years. That can be a giant. I know one of my uncles, I don't believe that he gave his life to Jesus. I certainly hope that that's not true. But when he went, and I still think about him now, 10 years on, and he was such a great bloke, such an influence for me. When I was a young teenager, only a few years ago now, I was very fortunate to be in a church with quite a large youth group. There was about 150, 160 members, and 40, 45 of us were what we would call in the youth. So it was a fair proportion. And we had youth leaders, David and Christine, and David's sister Irene, and the three of them, David and Christine were youth leaders, but the three of them sang. In fact, they got to the point where they paid about £3,000 to have some of their songs that they'd written recorded in a Manchester studio. Irene particularly had a fantastic voice, did a lot of Amdram, etc., etc. And David and Christine, we looked up to them. We admired them. They were great fun. They were on our level. So it was devastating when it came to light that David had been having an affair with one of the girls in our youth group. Of course, that has a big effect. And it caused, as you can imagine, a lot of grief, a lot of upset. But thank God, through that giant, the majority of the youth group came through that and stuck together in the belief in God. When I was even younger, my nan's church, I was about 6 or 7, and I'm going to say older people. There are probably a lot of those people who are called older at 6 or 7 are younger than me now. But I just remember one Sunday morning, and the church and people crying and people hugging each other. And although I still don't fully understand what went on, I do know that there was a couple of people with arrogant attitudes that were trying to rule and the church, and God broke in that Sunday morning and broke the barriers down. Worry. I think we all worry. My nan, again, she was a great influence on me, actually, my nan. I remember her reading Selwyn Hughes's devotionals to me and teaching me about the Bible, and I spent a lot of time with my nan, but she was a worrier. And I remember being on the radio, 93% of worry is unnecessary. And we were saying this to me now. My brother turned around to me now and says, yes, but you've got the 7%, haven't you, still to worry about? But it was a concern for me, Nan. And despite how she was often a worrier. One of my giants is self-belief. I'm naturally a shy person. Now, that may not surprise you, given the fact that I'm standing here in front of you this morning. But I've always suffered from self-belief and the fear of failure. My wife will tell you now that I still suffer from the fear of failure. And so I have to fight this, and I have to pray, and I have to say, Lord, please, let me overcome this. And it's difficult. When you've got some natural instinct, it's very difficult to overcome that. And I can only say that it's through God's grace. Because, as I say, I'm a naturally shy person, and I have to fight all the time in order to talk to people, to communicate. As I say, that might come as a surprise to you, but I can only say that it's God's grace. I'm sure we can all sympathize with David and the Israelites. They needed help. They needed deliverance. They needed a hero, somebody greater than the giant that they faced. Because these giants can pose a threat to our well-being, can't they? So enter the hero David. Or was he the hero? Was he just God's instrument? In verses 12 to 22, we can read that David was at home tending his father's sheep. And he was sent to the battlefield to provide provisions to get a report on the war. I reckon his report would have been this: Israel taunted and threatened on a daily basis and in complete fear. Then we read in verse 25 the following. Now the Israelites had been saying, "Do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage and will exempt his family from taxes in Israel." I have to say, when I first read that, I thought, well, depends how attractive his daughter is, really, whether I would want her or not. Having said that, tax-free, I'll take that, no problem. So we have the fear and we have the focus. Saul and the Israeli army, they were more worried about self-preservation. They didn't want to put their lives and bodies on the line. They didn't want to lose their lives. I suppose they were looking around for somebody to take charge. David was focusing on the giant. He wasn't focusing on self-preservation, but he was focusing on the glory of God. And in verse 26 it says, "Who is this unbeliever that he should defy the armies of the living God?" His attitude was, "What right has Goliath to intimidate God's people?" David focused on the thought that God's armies were more powerful than Goliath. So what did this focus do for David? This focus gave David faith. He had faith that God would give him the victory. Why would he do that? Well, verses 34 to 37. Let me quickly read. "David said to Saul, 'Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of the Philistine.'" In other words, David had remembered his past victories. Now, I'm sure many of us, we could spend all day, all week in testimony at the time that God has been with us and give us the victory. And one of the things with facing giants is that we know we have God there. And we know that God will supply our need because he's done it for us before. He's done it for me. When I have a doubt and say, Lord, why? Rod was saying this morning, why me? Why not me? I know that God has been there for me in the past and given me the victory. David's attitude was that Goliath had no right to intimidate Israel. He could and would be stopped. And in verses 38 and 39, Saul meant well. You see, Saul could see David. He gave his armor. He gave David his armor for protection. But David said, no, it's too big. It's too cumbersome. It's not right for me. When we face problems, it's great that we have friends, family, church people that we can talk to. The old saying, a problem shared is a problem halved. I think we just have to bear in mind, obviously, that human wisdom isn't God's wisdom. And whilst talking to people and getting people's opinion is great, and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever, we just have to remember that we need to focus on God ultimately. So in verses 39 to 44, David didn't gear up in armor. He took with him what he knew. He took his sling and his pouch, possibly his shepherd's staff. And in verse 44, Goliath starts to insult David. Come here, he said. I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. Nice chap. But in verse 45, David responds, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty. How wonderful, isn't it, as Christians, that we face trouble. You know, I've always been skeptical of preachers that say, come and be saved, come and give your life to Jesus and everything will be okay after that. That's not been my experience, I have to be honest. I'm sure it's the experience of most of us here. It's not the truth. But as Christians, how wonderful it is that we can call on God Almighty to help us in situations. I often say to people, actually, I think I've said before, well, I know I have, that my brother's partner, he's an atheist, he's really anti anything to do with church, but he did say to my brother a couple of years ago, you know, must be wonderful to have a faith and to have somebody to call on. And my brother said, well, absolutely, yeah, that is can't argue with that at all. And as Christians, it is, isn't it? It's great to have God to call upon. So again, why did David have this belief? Well, we need to just go back to chapter 16. God tells Samuel in chapter 16 that a son of Jesse of Bethlehem will be chosen. Excuse me. He had 8 sons. And Jesse presented each one to Samuel. And Samuel would say, well, yes, he's great, he's tall, I can see he's athletic, but that's not the one God's chosen. So they get through the first 7, and Samuel says, have you got any other sons? Well, I've got David. He's the youngest. In other words, I don't think he's going to be much use really to you, you know. I suppose if you want me to present him, yeah, bring David out. And then it says this. So he sent for him, David, and had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features. That could have been me. Then the Lord said, rise and anoint him. This is the one. So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And this is the key bit. This is the bit. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. If you don't remember anything else that I've said this morning, as Christians, remember that the power of the Lord is upon us and within us. And this is why David had that belief. See, man doesn't see what God sees. I'm sure if I'd have been in that situation, if I'd have been Jesse, I would have presented all my older, wiser, bigger, stronger sons, almost embarrassed to perhaps bring David out. But of course, God sees beyond all that, doesn't he? So back in chapter 17, David was confident of his victory. In verse 46, "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistines' army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." David won the battle, seemingly with an insufficient weapon, not a sword. We all know the story. He literally took some stones and with his pouch, out of his pouch, and he slung one at Goliath and felled him. What was the result of that? Verse 51. "David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine sword and drew it from the sheath. And he killed him. He cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and they ran." You know, the great thing is that in fighting giants, in fighting situations that we've got, we can turn the fear on its head. Instead of us being the one that are fearful, it's the situation that hopefully can run away. You see, if we're fighting giants, giants are real. Goliath was a real person. We're not talking about something hairy-fairy. And I'm sure all of us, with the giants that we face, they are real. The stakes can be high too. In the story, the integrity of the soldiers was there. There was an integrity of the nation, Israel, and God's integrity too. Are giants hard to overcome? In my experience, yes. I told you that self-belief is still an ongoing issue for me. But with God, we can overcome. Hopefully, we don't have the fear factor. Fear can paralyze and can cause further problems. Hopefully, we don't let the situation or any situation, any giant, get the upper hand. Of course, the real hero wasn't David. The real hero was God. And you know, this morning, I continue to pray. Part of my prayers every day, I pray for the church, and I just pray that every time we meet, that the Holy Spirit will come and descend on us, be with us, guide us. And you know, in overcoming a giant, in overcoming a situation, we have the Holy Spirit to call upon. In Joshua, Joshua is told, "Be strong and be courageous." We've sung this morning, "More than a conqueror." I don't quite understand that. I'd be happy to be a conqueror. Never mind, more than a conqueror. We've sung, "Great is thy faithfulness." And this morning, I'd just like to say, church, that whatever giants we're facing, practically, I don't have all the answers. I don't believe any of us have all the answers. But what we do have, and if you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, then one thing I can guarantee, that if you become a Christian, you'll still have the problems, you'll still have giants to face, but with the Holy Spirit and with God amongst us, then we can overcome those giants. And you know what? The biggest giant as a church, I think, that we face is looking and saving as many people as we can. We heard Colin last week, the prophetic, about the river gushing down. Of course, a river gushing will pick up things. As Colin said, a river that meanders doesn't necessarily pick up things. Don't we as a church want to be a rushing, gushing river? And in overcoming giants and in trusting in God, then I believe that that can be the case. Thank you.